Welcome to the Safety Podcast, where we connect health, safety and environment to keep you learning, evolving and having a positive impact. Thanks for taking the time to join us for this episode. Let's get started. Hey folks, what's the crack? We're back here in the Safety Podcast. It's been a few weeks since we released one, and this one actually dates back, I have to admit, quite a few months now, because of various reasons, including the COVID-19 pandemic and everything that brought to us. We actually postponed this podcast numerous times due to various unforeseen events, etc. But now we're releasing it. So first and foremost, I want to apologize to Christian for keeping him waiting for so long for the release of this podcast. Christian, if you don't know Christian Harris, he specializes in slip safety for businesses. So if you are working in operational management or within the HSE function in any way, of course, this should be of interest to you. There are a few tips during the podcast that are really useful and ways that you can limit risk and the risk of claims, which we're all, I'm sure, very familiar with. And especially with COVID-19 and all of the challenges that that's brought to us, I think it's very important, and this is why I feel like it's a good time to release this podcast. It's important for us to remember all of the normal things that cause us pain and challenge us within the HSE environment whilst we're trying to manage everything else that's going on at the moment. One thing just to I want to make you aware of is that because we recorded this a few months back, we do mention and reference some aspects according to the season, which was winter time, and which obviously won't be just so relevant at the moment. But of course, for many of us, it won't be too long before we're considering that again in the near future. And just before we do go over to chat to Christian, I want to mention that our online health and safety risk assessment course is currently free, and it's available to anyone, including your employees, if you want to use it. I can't really say how long it's going to be free for, but for the foreseeable future, it should be accessible for free on our website, and I'll drop a link to the course down below the show notes here. And it's getting raving reviews and a great reception from those who have registered and enrolled on it so far. We're delighted to see that and to be giving some more sort of free material and resources back to businesses during this tough time. So thank you for your support on that one. And if you do have any further questions on it, don't be afraid to drop me an email at richard@safety.com. Apart from that, look, we're trying to grind out a few podcasts here and there. Unfortunately, just because of the way things are at the moment, we can't guarantee when our next podcast will be released, but we appreciate you taking the time to listen to this one, and we'll look forward to chatting to you in the future. Let's go over and speak to slip safety expert Christian Harris. Christian, thank you for coming on, joining us here in the Safety Podcast. Where are you today? I never asked.
I'm in London. I live in London, and I probably spend about half my time in and around the M25. So, typically in London, but often as well travelling the length and breadth of the country to meet with customers or partners or whoever it might be.
Yeah, very much. I understand your plight, so it's all good. You're in London. We had, like another guest I had on previously, we were going to do this on a couple of occasions before, so it's good to get you on the show. You are quite prevalent on social media. I'm sure people will be aware of you. I see if anybody's talking about slip safety around the social media, certainly on LinkedIn, that usually your name is first out of the hat or thrown in there by a few people. So that must be a good thing, surely.
Yeah, I mean, that's the idea, really, to try and be known as the, I don't know what the best word is, I wouldn't want to say guru, but known as somebody that has something to offer, the specialist on the subject. So, I'm very active on LinkedIn, as you say, pretty much do something every day on there and, try and just add some value and educate and give people thought-provoking content that hopefully helps them to think about things differently and solve some problems. So always happy to be brought into the discussion.
Great. Well, thank you for your time here. I mean, this is, it's one of those painful subjects that certainly from the health and safety world, I'm sure I speak on behalf of a lot of people that, as you well know, slips, trips and falls are still ubiquitous across the UK and the most common cause of injury. And sometimes it gets to the point where your efforts seem to be in vain. Why is it that we're still we're still challenged so much by this, do you think?
It's a good question. I mean, if you look at overall health and safety performance in the UK since the 70s, when statistics started to be properly tracked, we're leading the world in health and safety overall. You know, our serious accidents and deaths at work and everything is trending downwards. Started to flatten out a little bit in the last few years, but you know, overall in a much better position than we were. But if you look at slips, trips and falls, but also things like manual handling, these kind of attritional everyday, for want of a better phrase, accidents, and indeed leading into insurance claims, they just seem to be happening at the same kinds of rates all the time. So proportionally, they're getting arguably more and more important. I mean, I think that there's a few issues around slips, trips and falls that mean that people perhaps don't put as much emphasis on it as they maybe might do. And they maybe look at things a little bit superficially rather than getting sort of into the detail a bit more. And most of the kind of solutions or the problem solving around this is fairly straightforward if you know what you're looking for. But I think, as with lots of things in life, if you think something's likely to be straightforward, you perhaps take the helicopter level choice in terms of trying to solve it. And that doesn't necessarily get you down to the detail where you need to be in order to make things happen.
Right. Okay. I mean, I think I know what you're talking about there when you say that, but to paint a picture of what you would sort of perceive as being a superficial approach, can you tell us what that would be as an example?
Yeah, I mean, I can give you a few examples. So, you know, when I'm out and about and talking to people or reading articles or whatever it might be, you know, the sorts of things that I would hear would be, oh, yeah, there was a slip, but I put a yellow floor sign out, so what more could I have done? Or the floor was wet, so it's bound to be slippery. Or our insurance will cover it, so we don't need to worry about it. Or, you know, we've got an anti-slip floor, so I'm not worried about people slipping over. So sort of things like that, where people are kind of not giving it maybe the importance that it maybe deserves. So, you know, yellow signs, for example, bit of a bugbear of mine because they're just not used properly. I think people kind of just plonk them out and think, oh, that's fine, because people will see them and won't slip. Or if someone does slip, and I think this is actually why people use them, if someone does slip, well, it's not my fault because I put a yellow sign out. But that doesn't actually help to solve any of the root causes around the accident. It doesn't really make the environment safer. And signs are just so ubiquitous, to use the word you used a moment ago. You know, you see them all the time. They actually, people are desensitized to them. And I don't really think they have much of an effect on stopping slips in the vast majority of cases.
So you're saying, obviously, using floor signs and so on, we can be lulled into a false sense of security that things are okay and you're doing the most you can do when floors are wet and all that type of stuff, which is something I know is a big bugbear of yours. And it's not a very good strategy for avoidance.
No.
When it comes to actually accidents happening, what are the biggest challenges you see to being, you know, good at this in terms of being proactive, putting the right systems in place? Is it an awareness and understanding thing, or is it more like this doesn't justify the budget?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think that there's definitely a lack of awareness and a lack of understanding, and hence all the work that I do around trying to raise the profile of this and some of the solutions. I think that's definitely part of it. And I think there's a bit of a perception issue around slips, because we either hear things like they're inevitable, or we hear things such as they're comedic, or you know, if you Google slip accident, for example, or if you search for it on YouTube, you probably find a multiple of funny videos of animals skidding around on ice or whatever, versus actually some stuff around what happens when someone slips over and bangs their head and dies, or slips over and breaks their leg and gets their leg amputated and things like that. And then I think the budgetary piece is also interesting, because there's this kind of general understanding around, you know, well, the insurance will cover this. But actually, in most cases, certainly from a customer injury and claim perspective, you're going to have an excess on your insurance policy, just like you would if you with your car insurance or your home insurance. And typically the excess is, you know, 10, 15, 20K. The average slip trip claim is around 10K. So if you've got an excess of 15K and you get a fair few slip accidents, you know, those aren't actually being covered by your insurance at all. They're being paid directly from the bottom line of the company. So I think, you know, in the context of an accident costing 10K, some of the solutions for this are very, very much less expensive than that. And therefore, you know, I think if people started to look at it in just a bit more detail around the cost benefit, where the real cost is going, then that side of things would improve.
Yeah.
I mean, it's always a challenge. I was chatting the other day to somebody from one of the big supermarkets, and as I said to him, you know, it's much easier for somebody who operates a single site to see, right, we've had an accident and it's cost us 10K. Let's spend £1,000 or £2,000 on preventing the next accident. But it's much more difficult if you start to talk to companies that have, you know, 100, 200, 1,000, 2,000 sites, because the numbers clearly are just multiples of the cost, and therefore that it starts to become expensive. And I think it's always difficult to convince people to be proactive around risk management in order to, you know, prevent something that may or may not happen. It's much easier if they're in kind of trouble mode to say, well, look, here's something that can help you to prevent this from happening again. But yeah, that's the kind of one of the big challenges as well.
Yeah. You talk a lot about leisure centres in your posts, and whenever just to give a bit of a personal context, I suppose, whenever I take my kids to the swimming pool, which I do quite often, I'm always conscious of them going on their backside when they start running, as they normally do. And interesting to see your perspective on this. We're quite fortunate over here where I live. We've had quite a lot of new leisure centres actually, and new ones opening up, which appear to have very good flooring, but ones built maybe in the last 15 to 20 years, not that old, but when I take them to those ones, it appears like the floors are very slippy actually, and I've caught my kids a few times almost wrecking themselves on it. I'm sort of wondering to myself, you know, how are big public facilities like this getting away with leaving the floors in this condition? You know, obviously if that is by design, poor design, or through wear and tear or poor maintenance, something of that nature, then, you know, surely there's people slipping and injuring themselves constantly, and therefore, as you've mentioned, you know, claims going in left, right and center. What's your experience there? What's the big problem for them?
Well, I mean, there certainly are. I mean, if you look at the leisure sector, for example, and you analyse the data from the claims portal, so any personal injury claims that come in under 25K go through this portal process, which your listeners are probably well aware of. Slips is the number one cause of claim in leisure. I think it's something like 40% higher than the number two cause, and about three times the volume of the number three cause. So it's by far the biggest cause of claim in that sector. But going to your question more broadly, I think that there was in the past, you know, when we're talking about older buildings, a lack of awareness around what the standard should be when it came to the installation of floors. I think there's more clarification, more certainty around that now. Certainly, I've been involved in this world for about 10 years, and it's definitely true that architects, for example, know more about slip resistance now than they did 10 years ago. Yeah. So I think there's something there around, you know, perhaps when these buildings were built, they weren't built to the same kind of standard that you would expect nowadays. But I also think there's something around, you know, people. I do a lot of presentations to IOSH groups, for example, or to insurance companies, or to brokers, or whoever it might be. So people that you would kind of expect to know something about this subject. And whenever I put up a photograph of a pendulum test, which is what the HSE use to measure how slippery floors are, and I ask for a show of hands who knows what this is, it's very rare that it's anywhere near 10%. So that suggests to me that, you know, people aren't people don't know that their floors are slippery as such, or know for sure, because they're not getting the right kinds of data to enable them to then make an informed decision on how to deal with the problem. So I think, you know, again, it's going back to that awareness piece around getting some of this testing done and using that data to enable you to manage the risk a bit better.
In the industrial context then, you know, for the likes of manufacturing organizations, you know, which I've worked with before a lot in the past, certainly, is there such an issue? I've had experience, of course, of people slipping and injuring themselves within that context myself, and also in construction, certainly more so the public interface was a big problem. Is there enough of a driver there for change? I mean, one of the things that I experienced was trying to convince business leadership to not put a maintenance regime in place that compromised the slip resistance of the floor, and actually had some struggle to convince them that putting certain chemicals and products to make the floor aesthetically pleasing was completely to the detriment of its slip resistance, which, you know, scientifically and technically was correct, but they seem to be more concerned about what it looked like.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly a difficult thing. In terms of manufacturing and construction, so what I tend to see in manufacturing or industrial is actually that on the whole, the floors, it's kind of similar to what I answered about leisure, but on the whole, I think the floors there tend to be better than on average across various sectors. What I tend to find across all sectors is that floors are either very slip resistant and good, or they're not very good, and doesn't tend to be much in between. That might be because I'm getting asked to look at problem floors or good floors, and not much in the middle. But the other thing with manufacturing is that people tend to have PPE in place, and, you know, footwear is a very good, very good control measure for you know, you can have a slippery floor, but with excellent, you know, covered in grease, but with excellent footwear, you're very unlikely to slip. Construction is difficult because it's a sort of a moving feast, if you know what I mean, and things are always changing, and therefore it's quite hard, I think, to put in place very, very good control measures. You know, for example, if you think about the surfaces and the floors, you know, they're always going to be changing what's on the floor. So that's a difficult one. Again, that's where footwear maybe comes into play particularly well in terms of a control measure.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen, you know, I'm just thinking back as you're discussing that, as I was saying, the public interface being one of the biggest problems with the construction industry when, you know, creating temporary walkways and so on, considering the impact of the surfaces during different weather spells, and obviously considering the footwear that the public is wearing, which could be anything. That was always a bit of a challenge.
Yeah.
Do you work with construction companies and stuff in that regard, or companies that are doing those types of temporary works?
We do work with construction companies, but it tends to be around advising them on the surface, the kind of more permanent surfaces that are going to be installed. So, you know, we're putting down this vinyl floor or this red floor or these tiles. Can you check that they're okay? And then can you come in and give us that kind of handover certificate to say, yeah, we've handed over the floor in a safe condition, or potentially getting involved in post construction cleaning, where you know, that often throws up issues around aesthetics, but also safety. Haven't had that much experience around the management of risks in kind of live construction sites. But things like temporary walkways, you know, that would certainly be an area that we could advise people on. And I'm sure there would be, again, some quite simple things that could be done. But I guess if people just don't have the knowledge, they would work on assumptions that might not be correct. I mean, we see tons and tons of checker plating around the place, and I can imagine the scenario you've described as a temporary walkway might have loads of checker plating on it because, oh, well, that's textured, so therefore it's anti-slip. But actually, if you were to put that end only rigger in terms of how slip resistant the surface is. It's very slippery. It's metal basically. And the little profiles on it don't actually work in the way that you expect they might work to give grip. A bit like the same as we see in shower trays and bathtubs, where you get these kind of dimples built into them, but actually they're just as slippery on those areas as they would be if it was flat. So there's some simple things there, appearance of effectiveness,
but in reality, there's no real substantiation to it.
You know, we see a lot of people just taking it as read that the floor's got a texture or a profile, so therefore it's slip resistant, or rubbing your foot over the floor. Yeah, that feels okay. You know, rather than, as I say, going into the more scientific ways of looking at things.
In terms of the pendulum testing and stuff, is that I've never had to do it myself. Is it technical? Is it very easy to do? Technical? Is it something people could do in house or?
Yeah, is it easy to do? I mean, I find it pretty easy to do now because I've been doing it for so long. When I first started doing it, I found it very difficult to do because it's quite fiddly. I helped one of the big international hotel chains with some stuff on slip strips and falls a few years ago, and they decided to buy a pendulum. We arranged for them to go up to Buxton to the HSL to have, you know, all the proper training and so on and so forth. And then they had this one pendulum, which they were sharing around a cluster of hotels. But within 6 months, they'd kind of given up on it because they found that, and I think I would agree, unless it's something you're doing very, very regularly, you can kind of easily get out of the knack of it. And obviously, if you're not doing it properly, then you're not getting the right data, and therefore you may as well not be doing it. But yeah, there's nothing to stop people doing it themselves in theory. There are some other tests in the market that are much more user-friendly, and you wouldn't necessarily rely on them in the same way. You know, you wouldn't want to go to court off the back of them, but they're very good for monitoring changes over time. So, you know, if you install the new floor and you know that it's a good floor and you've had it, it's got a pendulum test on it and blah, 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 then there are some other tests that you could use. You know, there's one called a slip alert, for example, which is pretty good. Or you could use surface roughness tests, a couple of others that they'll give you a number. Forget necessarily what the number says. But actually, if you test again and again and again and again, and you're always getting the same number, bearing in mind you're using the same test, you know, that says to you that things are staying the way that they were. If the number starts to change, then you need to take some action potentially. So I think, you know, that's typically how we suggest people, if they want to do their own monitoring, we would normally suggest to them to use one of these more user-friendly tests and use it in that way. So use it for monitoring, just monitor that number, check it's not changing. If it's not changing, you're not having accidents, you're keeping an eye on it, everything's good.
Fair enough. I think that would be considered reasonable, just to keep an eye on that level of degradation if you do have any big services that could potentially be a problem. Maybe you can share some resources with us on the podcast notes, you know, regarding those different approaches that people can take if they do want to go and maybe check something out, something they're worried about. I know you use a framework that you've shared with me called CHIMES, which is fairly well known around sort of the slip risk management elements. So maybe you can give us a rundown and just to wrap us up here on what that is and what each of the elements of the acronym CHIMES means.
Sure. So this is basically a framework for people to think about in terms of, you know, if there are six things here, and if you can manage these six things well, then you're very unlikely to have issues with slips. Conversely, if you're unable to manage a number of them or even any of them, then you're very likely to have slips. So it's kind of just a bit of a benchmarking process to say, well, look, you know, am I doing everything I can on each of these things? Again, using the test of reasonableness, for example. And actually, if you can tick the boxes across, then you can feel pretty comfortable that, you know, you're doing what you can. So, yeah, CHIMES, I'll run through. It's C is for contamination. So that means, you know, are there things like grease or oil on the floor, body fats, but also contamination from the perspective of, is the floor foreseeably wet or not. So contamination on a foreseeably dry floor would be a spillage. So is there a way of preventing the floor from getting contaminated? Because, you know, thinking about the accident, you know, the hierarchy of control measures, elimination being right at the top. If you can keep your floors clean and dry, they're very, very unlikely to have slips on them. H is for heel. So by heel, we mean the foot or footwear. So if you're in a restaurant, for example, and you have issues with your staff slipping over in the kitchen, then one of the good control measures, as we've touched on earlier, could be putting in some slip-resistant footwear. Conversely, if it's a member of the public slipping over in the front of house area, there's not really much you can do to control what they're wearing on their feet, and therefore that's one that sometimes is and sometimes isn't controllable. I is for individual, so human factors. So if this is common sense, again, as you said earlier, but perhaps people wouldn't think about it. If you're pushing, pulling, carrying items, you need more friction. If you're twisting or turning, you need more friction. If you're walking up or down a slope, you need more friction. If you're distracted, like you're looking at your iPhone or you're looking at a big, you're entering into a shop and you're looking at the big plasma screen TVs, you know, you're less likely to see a risky floor, and then you're more likely to have an accident. So all of these kind of human factors. So what can we do as health and safety people to try to mitigate the risk around those human factors? So if we're thinking again about the restaurant setting, you know, can we change the way that people have to work so that they're not pushing and pulling or having to carry things? Or can we change walkways so that people aren't twisting and turning around corners and things like that? M is for maintenance. And by that, really, we're thinking about how the floor surface is maintained from the perspective of cleaning. So there's a lot of, as you said earlier, there's a lot of issues around cleaning for aesthetics versus cleaning for safety.
Yeah.
There are issues around some of the big cleaning contractors we work with, for example. They'll have kind of these big multinational procurement deals with particular manufacturers of equipment or chemicals or whatever it might be. And so they'll just as standard install these wherever they go, and they won't necessarily follow the guidance of the flooring manufacturer as well. Cleaning as well can introduce risk. So whilst floors are being cleaned in foreseeably dry areas, you know, think of an office building, then if we're introducing water in the cleaning process to make the floors cleaner, well, you know, they're riskier when they're wet. So thinking about the time of day you're doing your cleaning is another way of managing things.
I think that is that's an obvious one, but it's easy to not give enough attention to, I would suggest.
Yeah.
You know, especially if your maintenance or your cleaning regime has to change slightly for any given reason. You know, that can, you know, for example, if you have normally cleaning outside of normal working hours, but for some particular reason there's extra work needs to be done, so all of a sudden you're bringing the cleaners in an hour early or something.
That can
really have a profound impact, in my experience, for sure.
And there are lots of things that go into cleaning. So again, people, you know, a bit like what we were saying earlier around slips, trips and falls, people look at it kind of from a helicopter level and don't get into the detail. Well,
yeah,
it's kind of quote unquote just cleaning. Well, actually, clean around, you know, the methodology, the frequency, the time, the equipment, the training, you know, and all of these things, you know, making changes to any of these is likely to have an effect on the outcome that you get from your cleaning, and therefore the outcome in terms of slip safety. One of the things you can do is use the pendulum or another test and actually monitor how effective the cleaning regime is from the perspective of, is it making the floor more or less or the same level of slipperiness after you've cleaned it. So, you know, if you've got, I think it's important to say that, you know, there's a difference between environments which are foreseeably wet, like a kitchen or a poolside or external areas, and environments that are foreseeably dry. But if you've got environments that are foreseeably wet, then really the cleaning regime should be such that after you've cleaned the floor is still slip resistant when it's wet. But you will find that there are certain
methods of cleaning floors that might make them look good aesthetically, but will make them slippery when wet. And therefore, you fall into the trap of, oh, it looks clean. People understand, I think, that cleaning and safety go hand in hand when it comes to people slipping or tripping. Oh, it looks clean, so therefore it is clean. Well, it's, I always use the analogy of an operating theatre table. If you were being wheeled in for an operation and the surgeon spat on his hanky and wiped across the table, it would look clean, but it'd be full of germs. And slip resistance is kind of similar. So the floor can look clean, but still be slippery. So that's a big topic. E is for environment. So that means things like the weather, of course. So, you know, an entrance area is more likely to get wet if it's in Manchester than in the middle of the Saharan deserts. But it also means things like slopes, steps and stairs, lighting, noise. So again, a bit of noise can distract somebody and so on and so forth. So getting these environmental things correct as much as you can. And S, the final letter in the acronym, is for surface, so the floor. So again, are we choosing the appropriate level of slip resistance for the environment? Are we tracking and monitoring that over time to make sure that the surface continues to give us what we expect it to?
Obviously, the surface aspect is more the engineering, you know, changes that you would be doing in terms of or substitution, whatever way you want to term it, in terms of the risk hierarchy, and probably something that you want to consider fairly early on, you know, beyond removing the people from the area, for example, which would be potentially eliminating it.
Yeah, well, there was a big case in 2015 where a gentleman slipped over in a co-op store in Truro in Cornwall, and he banged the back of his head and unfortunately died as a result. And the circumstances there were that there was a leaking chiller or something like that, and the floor was kind of getting wet. And I was fairly heavily involved in this one, actually, but the policy was, you know, of the retailer was that if the floor was wet, then somebody would stand with it until the floor was, and there'd be a yellow sign out until the floor was dry. But actually what happened in the accident was that the yellow floor sign was left there, the floor was wet, and this guy slipped over and unfortunately died as a result. And when they were summing up the case, the council, Cornwall Council, said, summarising, that signage alone is not enough. You've got to be proactive to either stop floors becoming slippery, in other words, you know, stop them getting wet or make them safe when they're wet, or precluding access. So, yeah, the surface itself is really important. If you can understand what surface you've got, if you've got a good surface, if you've got a good surface, it doesn't matter if it gets wet because it's still safe. And therefore you don't need to worry. Whereas if you've got a very slippery surface and it's going to get wet, okay, there's an alarm bell. Let's do something about it.
But in that case, just in, you know, it's very interesting and tragic, obviously. Was it perceived that the actual maintenance issue that had happened, and the resulting slippery floor, was that perceived as being foreseeable, or what way did they view that?
Funnily enough, the slip resistance of the floor didn't really come up in terms of the, I wasn't present in the court, but I read the transcripts I had visited the site for one of the law firms that was involved in the case. Effectively, what happened was that they fell foul of not following their procedures. So, you know, they had a procedure, they didn't follow it. I think the court found that, looking at CCTV, the floor had been wet for dozens of hours within the last couple of days or something like that. So it wasn't as if, you know, it was a momentary thing that had happened, and you know, they just hadn't followed the procedures, and obviously they were then found you know, very much culpable in terms of the sentencing guidelines, which I know you've discussed on the podcast before. The fine there, they in the end, was 400k. So you know, that's a pretty significant fine. So if you put that into the context of one of your earlier questions around the cost of trying to mitigate the risk and prevent something from happening, that alone, you know, they could have done a hell of a lot across their whole business for 400k, not to mention all their legal fees and all that other stuff on top.
Yeah, I mean, it just sort of brings into context as well the importance of having a proactive culture, you know, and an awareness of the types of outcomes that can result whenever you have conditions like that.
And also lots of people would have walked over it and through it and not slipped over, because just because a floor is wet and the floor surface is slippery doesn't necessarily mean that you will slip, because we can all walk on an ice skating rink without slipping over. But obviously, if you've got if the situation is such that you're relying on a large proportion of people to do something in order not to slip, then obviously that's when you're in a difficult situation. And that's one of the things the pendulum test can help with. Mm-hmm. In terms of the floor surface, you know, you can have a risk factor of, you know, 1 in 20, let's say, or 1 in a million. So at the bottom end, you're relying on 1 in 20 people to try and do something themselves in order not to slip over. Whereas if you're at the top end of things, you're only relying on 1 in a million people to have to do something, not to slip. So, you know, I think, again, it reinforces where some of this measurement stuff can be really valuable.
Be useful. Just to wrap us up, Christian, obviously it's that time of year again where we're heading into the depths of winter and the darkness
hashtag,
is upon us.
Yeah, hashtag slippery season, as I've been calling it.
Well, just on that, I mean, obviously I hadn't asked you, but do you get involved in any of the more seasonal stuff like the ice and snow? Because obviously for health and safety professionals, that's a big question in terms of planning and an expectation for businesses.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. We don't get involved that much on that, but I mean, one of the question I often get asked is, you know, should we grit, shouldn't we grit, and things like that. And I think the answer is that from a regulatory perspective, you know, the HSE would expect you to do what's reasonable, and therefore, you know, gritting is a reasonable thing to do, and therefore you're better off doing it than not. Because I think a lot of people, mm-hmm. particularly in the last few years when this kind of claims culture has been getting worse and worse, people have this kind of question mark, well, if we do this and then something happens, are we liable or not? But I mean, I think, you know, the regulator would say yes, you should be doing it. So, you know, that's certainly the advice that we'd be suggesting to people. What you will find in this time of year in terms of coming inside of buildings is that obviously it's this time of year when your entrance system is likely to be under the most pressure. Mm-hmm. So, you know, have you got adequate depth of matting on the floor, fixed matting? You know, HSE would say you should have 3 steps per foot. So in other words, you need 4 meters or something like that of built-in matting. Most buildings don't have that. Have you got a canopy outside which might mitigate the need for some of that matting? You know, and the best way to figure out very quickly whether your entrance system is working well is just stand inside on a wet day and just see, is there water on the floor? Are there wet footprints on the floor? If there are, then that would tell you that the floor inside that reception area or entrance area, you know, is going to get wet, and therefore you should try and do something to make that floor a bit safer. But that's a very quick and easy tip for people to think about this time of year. It's just stand inside and have a look.
Okay, good one. That was a good little tip to finish on. I think, as you say, it is very, very relevant, especially coming into this time of year, and something that they can take away and simply look at in and out of their buildings. I'm sure most of the audience listening are responsible for or partly responsible for, you know, those entrance and exits in and out of buildings. And it is a time of year where you start to pray that it doesn't get too icy and too cold, yeah. You know, because all the associated problems that brings. But you know, obviously with the right planning and foresight, you can make it a lot less risky and hopefully avoid the worst scenarios. So thanks for coming on, Christian, and giving us your thoughts here. It's obviously still a big challenge out there. A lot of the work that's being done in the slip safety space still seems to be reactive rather than proactive. But, you know, hopefully the likes of yourself out there can help companies if they do want to be a bit more forward thinking and try and get ahead of the game on this.
Yeah, absolutely. That's, you know, we would obviously much rather people were being proactive rather than reactive. And I think actually overall, you know, that's a better business case because doing something to stop an accident versus doing something when you've had an accident and a claim is always going to be cheaper because, you know, these accidents can be very, very expensive.
Yeah, for sure. Where can we find you there, Kristen? You know, we said you're on LinkedIn, obviously.
Sure, yeah.
I'll put a wee link to your personal profile on LinkedIn.
Thanks.
There on the show notes. No worries. What's your website there for anyone?
Yeah, LinkedIn's good. You'll be able to find me there easily. And the website is slipsafety.co.uk. So it's quite easy to remember, hopefully.
Good stuff. I'll pop a wee link into that as well. Thanks again for coming on to the Safety Podcast. We'll keep an eye out for what you're up to in the near future. So take care of yourself.
Thanks, Richard. I enjoyed it.
Well, that's it. It came to a bit of an abrupt end there with Christian. Hopefully you got some value from that chat, whether you're in the Northern Hemisphere and looking forward to autumn, which is just around the corner, or you're in the middle of winter in the Southern Hemisphere. We hope it brings you value, or at any time in the future that you're listening to this, if you want to check out Christian's services. And of course, do remind you again that health and safety risk assessment course at safety.com, which is currently free as of the publishing of this podcast in July of 2020. Thanks again. I hope you're taking care of yourself, and I hope to speak to you very soon. All the best. Thank you once again for joining us for this episode. We really hope you got value from the content. If you'd like to provide us with some feedback, which we would obviously love, please take a minute to rate and review the podcast on whichever platform you're using. Also, if you enjoyed it, please hit subscribe to make sure you catch our future episodes. And of course, share it with anyone who you think may find it useful. For more free resources and to find out more about what we do, you're always welcome to visit us at safety.com. Until next time, take care and good luck.